time to join Joan Lewis, our expert on all things Vatican. She begins by taking a look at the high points of our week here, starting with Pope Benedict's words last Sunday in Castel Gandolfo after praying the Angelus. Joan,
yeah.
You're eager to follow everything the Pope does, so you were listening on Sunday, weren't you, after the Angelus at his words to the faithful.
He had some wonderful things to say in this wonderful Benedict manner. You know, he never deals in cliches. He talks about so many things, the Gospels and readings and whatever that we've heard a thousand times before, but he picks up on some aspect of it that none of us may have thought about.
New angle.
A new angle. And then, but last Sunday it was very personal because one of the things, of course, that he talked about was that very difficult parable to understand from the Gospel of St. Matthew, where, you know, the Lord of the vineyard calls the laborers to work at him for various times of the day. So, and the people who do 1 hour of work get paid the same as those who do eight. And of course, the 8 hour people kind of grumbled. But what the Pope said, and this was so wonderful. And of course, I don't know about you, but I was in the square and heard him say this. He recalled when he was out on the balcony, having just been elected Pope, and he's uttering his first words as Pope Benedict to the world. And he said, he recalled how when elected to the papacy, he presented himself as a worker in the vineyard of the Lord.
A humble worker.
A humble worker. He did. And I mean, I don't even know if he finished the rest of the sentence by the time the people were just applauding like mad, you know. And so then he goes on to talk again about the parable and the gospel, saying that actually the money that the Lord was talking about in the gospel represents eternal life, which I guess most of us just don't look at it. We're in our very, you know, earthly mindset. And he said it's a gift that God reserves for everyone. And he said, this is when those considered last, if they accept the gift, become first. And the reverse is true, those who don't accept it. And I also love this phrase of the Holy Fathers. He said, the first message of this parable lies in the fact that the owner of the vineyard cannot tolerate unemployment, which I thought was a very interesting way of looking at this. Gee, you need a little help for your family. I know you're only going to work an hour, but here's, you know, we'll agree on this sum. The Lord, you know, wants everyone to be employed. It was just a wonderful thing.
Benedict also made a couple of appeals, didn't he?
Oh, he did. He talked about the victims, of course, of the storms in the Caribbean and on Texas. He specifically did mention the Dominican Republic, Haiti, and Cuba. And, of course, Haiti and the Dominican Republic share an island, if you will. They're just, you know, one's the east side and one's the west side. And, of course, Haiti's the poorest nation on earth, I think, or certainly one of the poorest. So to lose everything you have when you practically have nothing is devastating beyond description. And then we all saw pictures on television, obviously, what happened in Texas. So he said he assured those people of prayers for them, and he trusted that aid would obviously arrive. And then the second thing that he did mention was the UN General Assembly, which was going to convene several days later. And he talked about a high-level meeting to examine progress made in the Millennium Development Goals, of course, which were set forth in the year 2000. And he just said that he hoped everyone, meaning especially the leaders of the countries here at the UN, hope they can courageously take up and apply measures necessary to eradicate extreme poverty, hunger, ignorance, and pandemics, which strike the most vulnerable. And that's even true, as we saw in the case of Haiti, for example.
On Monday, the president of the Italian Bishops' Conference opened the fall session of the bishops' meeting, no? He's Cardinal Angelo Bagnasco.
Yes, he's the Archbishop of Genoa, following in the footsteps, of course, of Cardinal Bertone, now Secretary of State. But he highlighted something that I have been dedicating an awful lot of attention to, and that's the persecution against Christians that's taking place in India. We hear about the terrible persecutions, especially in Orissa, India, they're in Pakistan, and obviously in Iraq. And I've been following developments in Vietnam. They are just hallucinating what's been happening in recent days in Vietnam. And the cardinal used a really interesting word, Christianophobia. fear of Christians. The cardinal said what was happening, for example, in India. He said this persecution was unleashed because of the work Christians do in those areas on behalf of the people at the bottom of the social ladder, because we know there's the caste systems there. And he said this is an initiative which is thought to be destabilizing by a certain social and political class. Obviously, the haves don't want this to happen, you know, and the have-nots do want to have a voice, and the church is a voice for the voiceless. So he talked about, the religious cleansing, for example. We saw that certainly in Iraq when Archbishop, not so much that he was killed, but the treatment that he received led to his dying, it's believed, you know, of a heart attack, Archbishop Raho of Mosul, who died, earlier this year. And so the cardinal urged a new, vigorous attention on the part of politicians, and I thought this was interesting, intellectuals, and the public, to the theme of religious freedom as the cornerstone of the civilization of human rights and the guarantee of authentic pluralism. And actually, if you were to go on your computer right now and Google the word religious freedom and comma Vatican, you'd find quite a number of talks recently given on this and on the persecution of religious minorities. Archbishop Silvano Tomasi, who, of course, represents the Holy See at the UN organizations in Geneva, gave an amazing talk about 3 or 4 days ago on the persecution of religious minorities, a calling, obviously, just as Cardinal Bagnasco did on Monday, for the guarantee of religious freedom.
So then we get to Tuesday, when there were two significant events. The annual celebration of European Heritage Days, and then, of course, the announcement, which you will talk to us about Padre Pio. So let's start with European Heritage Days.
Well, these are days that are celebrated throughout Europe in the month of September on the weekends in September. It originated actually at a meeting, I won't go into the details, in Granada, Spain in 1985. Kind of a suggestion was made at a meeting of European ministers responsible for architectural heritage. And gradually over a period of time, other ideas were added, other people got involved. And in 1991, the Council of Europe officially launched these days. And in 1999, this became a joint action of the Council of Europe and the European Commission. Now, the Vatican adheres to this initiative. And what they do is, for example, give admission to the Vatican Museums free of charge to the catacombs that are normally open to the public and administered by the Vatican. Those are all open free of charge. And this is a time of year, interestingly enough, when many, many monuments and sites that are never open during the year are open sometime or another in different countries in September. And I think what is fascinating is that the 49 states that are party to this cultural convention obviously all actively take part in it. The number of annual visitors is now estimated to be around 20 million at more than 30,000 participating monuments and sites. I can't even imagine how many there'd be in Rome alone. So that was one interesting piece of news regarding the Vatican. The other one regards the Pope's...
I'll let you talk about that, Roger. Yeah. I know that you care about this one.
I do. The Pope specifically, this next story, Benedict announced, if you will, through Cardinal Bertone, who was down in San Giovanni Rotondo, of course, at the shrine of St. Padre Pio, announced that the Pope will visit the shrine in 2009. No specific date was set, but it was a great story, and one of the spokesmen for the Friars Minor Capuchins said, Cardinal Bertone spoke Monday afternoon with the Holy Father, and the Pope asked all of those who love Padre Pio, and they are millions, said the spokesman, to pray for him, the Pope, for his ministry and for the entire church, and said he would willingly go to San Giovanni Rotondo in 2009. And he said, of course, that fills our hearts with joy. Now, we have to link, this announcement was made on the day that marked the 40th anniversary of the death of Padre Pio. And as I was reading a little more about the shrine and everything itself, I started reading the diary of Padre Pio and his explanation to his spiritual advisor of how he got the stigmata. And, you know, one of these days we'll do that almost as a special story. It's probably too long for the time frame we have for these weekend shows. But how he got the stigmata, the excruciating pain. You almost sensed pain in reading his words, to be honest. Just an amazing account of, he bore them for 50 years, we should say. And the stigmata, if anybody listening doesn't know what that is the five wounds of Christ, of course, the two in the hand, the 2 feet, and the wound in his side. So, and he bore these wounds very painfully, and they bled very painfully, and he had them bandaged, you know, most of the time, for 50 years. I mean, 50 minutes would kind of do me, and I can tell you as a human being. So it's an amazing story, and obviously come 2009, when the date is set, we will all be going there and following it more closely and watching it on TV. So that ought to be. I don't know, interestingly enough, I have to find out. I'm just guessing that Benedict was there as Cardinal Ratzinger, that there have probably been a few visits. But it's always significant. If you go as Cardinal Ratzinger, you go as one of you and me, as a faithful person who, you know, knows about Padre Pio and thinks he was a great man, and he is a saint. But when you go as Pope, you do give another dimension to something. I can't say an approval because, I mean, the shrine's been there for, you know, since his death, and the wonderful hospital that is run, the House of, for the Suffering, I think it's called. So,
Casa della Sofferenza.
Casa della Sofferenza, the House of Suffering, not for the Suffering. You're absolutely right. So
we get to Wednesday, the Pope's general audience.
Yes, and he was held in St. Peter's Square. That's the first time in quite some time because, you know, he was away in July and then August, and he was away, and most of the September meetings, of course, were in the Paul VI Hall. But I was in the Vatican Gardens the previous Saturday with a whole bunch of friends, and I had seen where they store, I've seen it several times, where they store this stage that the Holy Father is at. You know, he's seated on this now portable stage that was built for him last year, and you've got the great big covering, and the covering comes down like two leaves on a dining room table. It so you see the big white covering, and it just folds down into a flat, and it's carried off into the Vatican with this huge tractor-like machine. And so I was with these friends in the garden, and they were working on it. And so I said to them, you guys, you know what that is? That is the portable altar area, et cetera, stage where the Holy Father has Mass and audiences. So I said, since they're working on it, I'm going to take a guess that next Wednesday the audience is outdoors. And that's what it was. And the Pope, of course, talked as he has been since July 2nd, which came several days after the beginning of the Pauline year. He talked about St. Paul and his relation to the 12 apostles. So I hadn't ever thought about this, but of course it's true. He said, though Paul was a contemporary of Jesus's, he never had the opportunity of meeting him in his public life. So he felt the need to consult the Lord's closest and his first disciples. So Benedict names some of those when he talks about Paul's letters to the Galatians, Paul's letters to the Corinthians, his descriptions of Christ's words. And Paul was very eager for this firsthand knowledge of the Lord. You knew him. Tell me what he said, what he did. And that, even though we didn't know them, that gave Paul this huge fervor to go and preach. And it's going to be a great year, and I know many, many people will be coming to Rome. Many people will be leaving Rome to follow in the footsteps.
Heartfelt thanks there, as always, to Joan Lewis for keeping us informed.